So our last case for argument is that's going to be by phone. So Ms. Welsh?
Yes.
You can proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the Court, my name is Kelly Welsh, and I represent the Department of Criminal Justice Act.
Could you speak louder, please?
I would like to take a second to express my gratitude to the Court for allowing me to appear telephonically, and I regret any inconvenience my illness has caused to the Court and to Mr. Connell.
Okay, no problem. Go ahead.
As the Court is aware, Mr. Day presents two issues for appeal, the first being his sentence of imprisonment and the second being the District Court's order of restitution. I will discuss each of these issues in turn. With regard to Mr. Day's sentence of imprisonment, the District Court sentenced Mr. Day to 25 months incarceration based on a guideline range found by the Court of 21 to 27 months. The Court found that range based on facts that were neither admitted by Mr. Day nor found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. The facts that were admitted by Mr. Day in the plea colloquy, specifically making false statements with regard to one vehicle, would have established the base offense level of 6 with a guideline range of 6 to 12 months. This was for adding 4 additional levels for the amount of loss and 2 additional levels for more than one victim. that resulted in a range of 21 to 27 months, and the court sentenced Mr. Day in the middle. In the Booker court policy, Blakely holds and applies the United States sentencing guidelines in terms that any facts that were not admitted by Mr. Day or were not found beyond a reasonable doubt, which increased the sentence on a statutory maximum for offending purposes, applies to the United States sentencing guidelines. Mandatory nature of these guidelines that created the Sixth Amendment violation. The remedial majority of the Booker court held that the guidelines should be used as advisory, and they are but one factor under Section 3553A that the court must now consider. Provided the Booker court's holding, Mr. Day's sentence was unconstitutional, and that he received an increased sentence based on facts that were not admitted by him during the plea policy, and he was sentenced under a scheme when the guidelines were mandatory in nature. I would also point out that the court in this case did not impose an alternative sentence, as the court has been doing in the Western District of Wisconsin following the Blakely decision. Because Mr. Day did not raise an Apprendi or Sixth Amendment face-to-face objection in the district court, this court reviewed for plain error. The government agrees that there was error in this case and that it is plain. However, we disagree on whether the third prong of the plain error test was met, and that the error below did indeed affect Mr. Day's substantial rights. It affected his rights in that the error was prejudicial and affected the outcome of the proceedings, in that Mr. Day received a more severe sentence than what the range based on his admitted conduct would allow. That the mandatory use of the sentencing guidelines that was in place at the time of Mr. Day's sentence, that sentencing that affected the outcome, the court was obligated to find the range based on the preponderance standard based on facts found by him, was obligated to stay within that range pursuant to Section 3553 sub B, which is consistent excess. There were no departures in this case because under the mandatory guidelines that were in place at the time, no departures were allowed except for highly exceptional cases. And while there were no highly exceptional exceptions in this case that would be today's case out of the heartland, there certainly were reasons to support the sentence below what would now be the advisory guidelines.
Be concrete. What did the judge's findings made by the judge add to the sentence?
The district court judge added 4 levels from the base offense level of 6.
No, not the levels. What was the extra punishment?
The extra punishment was, and which constitutes the constitutional error, is that the sentencing range would have been 6 to 12 months, but it was increased to 21 to 27 months.
And he got a sentence of 25?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the judge picked 25 from the 21 to 27 range?
That's correct.
Thanks.
He said that the guidelines are advisory now, but were mandatory then, affected the outcome in this case in ways in which we really do not know. And I think that what is salient is not what the sentencing court would have imposed in terms of the government's argument that Mr. Day should establish that he would have received a different sentence, but that he could receive a different sentence now. In terms of the fact that the court must now consider all of the factors in 3553A, such as the nature and circumstances of the offense, particularly in this case, the defendant's characteristics that would, in my view, warrant the sentence lower than the advisory range, but when the guidelines were mandatory, were not extraordinary enough to warrant the departure and take his case out of the heartland of cases. And the court also now can consider the kinds of sentences available. And in this case, Mr. Day was eligible for probation, while when the guidelines were mandatory, the district court's options were strictly limited to a sentence of imprisonment. The fact fact is that many arguments that could be made now were not made below in the district court. There are no reasons on the fifth. And the fact that there are no reasons on the record that would reflect that the judge may not sentence Mr. Davis something other than 25 months, I don't think is dispositive, because as I stated, there are many arguments that could be made but weren't, because at the time they basically would have been fruitless arguments. The fact now that you don't need extraordinary reasons to depart from the guidelines, just reasonable ones, I think is sufficient to establish that the fact that the guidelines were mandatory then affected Mr. Day's substantial rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that it? Or you want to say something else?
Well, I was going to...
go ahead. Yes.
The final argument or issue in this matter, Your Honor, is restitution. If the court abused its discretion when it ordered Mr. Davis to pay $39,875 for restitution, it would be payable immediately. And based on the record, I think it's clear that the court failed to exercise any discretion at all with regard to the amount of restitution ordered and particularly the manner of payment. The court is required to consider the mandatory factors under 18 U.S.C. 3663A.1b, and with regard to the manner of payment, the factors under 3664F.2. And the record in this case is simply devoid of any indication that the court considered any of the mandatory factors. And in fact, almost everybody in the courtroom, with the exception of the district court judge, agreed that it would be exceptionally difficult for Mr. Day to pay restitution. The PSR notes that it would be difficult for Mr. Day to pay it. The government indicated that it probably isn't likely that Mr. Day will ever be able to repay restitution, which lends itself to the conclusion that there's no likelihood that Mr. Day would ever acquire sufficient resources in the future to pay restitution. And Mr. Day's objections also detailed his other financial obligations and reiterated his limited financial resources. But given the fact that it's clear that the court did not consider the mandatory factors when restitution was ordered, that this case should be remanded for sentencing both on the issue of the term of imprisonment and for restitution. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Welsh. Mr. Connell?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Paul Connell. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Madison, Wisconsin, in the Western District of Wisconsin, and I represented the United States below in the prosecution of Mr. Day. Mr. Day's appeal presents two issues, whether his sentence is plainly erroneous, and secondly, whether the district court abused its discretion by ordering restitution due and payable immediately at sentencing. With respect to the first issue, Your Honor, as the court is well aware, the government is conceding the first two prongs of the plain error test. So then looking at that third prong, the United States submits that Mr. Day simply cannot show that the error, that is the mandatory nature of the guidelines as to his sentence, affected his substantial rights. His guideline range was 21 to 27 months.
What would he have to do in order to convince you that there was a prejudice to him?
I'm not sure Mr. Day could do anything in this case, Your Honor, because the district...
No. What could any defendant do that would convince you?
Well, Your Honor, I guess looking at it this way, that the general cases that you've seen, you've got the cases where a defendant's sentenced at the very bottom of a guideline range and the judge says, geez, my hands are really tied here, I would have given you less, but the guidelines are...
Well, that almost never happens.
Right. And then you've got the difficult cases in the middle. Well, that would certainly... The defendant would certainly meet their third prong there.
But is there any other situation which you would concede that the defendant had shown a plain error?
Your Honor, I think the other ones that are a closer call are the ones in the middle where the judge gives a sentence right in the middle. And
what do you mean a closer call? What's your position?
Well, Your Honor, as I stand here today, I think the Rodriguez case from the 11th Circuit is the one that the United States believes this court should adopt, and that the defendant, if he can't, if the defendant, the burden's on the defendant, and if he can't make a showing, then he loses.
So now, suppose Day had gotten over this hurdle that you've erected, and suppose the judges said, gee, if it weren't for the guidelines, I'd sentence you to less. Now, that would satisfy the third criterion,
yes,
the plain error standard. Well, then what about the fourth?
Then, Your Honor, I think the United States would stand on its fourth prong and say that he could not argue that the error seriously affects the fairness, reputation, or public reputation of judicial proceedings because he was given a full PSR, sentenced under the system that had been in place for 20 years, given the
lack of allocation. So you're saying there's no plain error in a Booker setting. Zero. Even if the judge says, you know, I think the sentence is unreasonably long, my hands are tied, if the guidelines were merely advisory, I would have given you probation. Even a case where we know the person received an illegal 25-month sentence, you would still argue that it was not plain error.
I guess, Your Honor, that's what we're waiting for this court to decide.
That's ridiculous. Right?
Your Honor,
it's absurd. This would be a case where it was a clearly illegal sentence. Clearly illegal. And the judge would be saying, you know, you're going to go to prison for 25 months. It's illegal. You're going because I made a constitutional error. And just tough. That's the Department of Justice position?
Well, the position in Mr. Day's case, Your Honor.
No, that's the position in all your cases.
Well, Your Honor,
you just said that.
Well, Your Honor,
you don't regard an illegal sentence as ever plain error.
Well, we address them case by case, Your Honor.
No, you don't say case by case. You don't say case by case. You gave me a blanket answer. You didn't suggest there were any qualifications.
What?
Now tell me the case where it would be plain error. Post-Booker case in which there would be plain error.
Your Honor, I can't think of one.
You can't think of one? Because in your view, there are none.
Your Honor, as I stand here today representing the United States in this case against Mr. Day, he cannot meet that third prong.
Nobody, in your view, can get to the fourth base.
No, I think, Your Honor,
some could get to third base. No one can get home, on your view.
I think
at least you refuse to give me a case in which the defendant would get all the way home.
Your Honor, I can't think of one today.
Well, you said that if he gets to the third base, I guess, by saying, 21, 27?
Yes, Your Honor, he got 25
21
months
and the judge regrets he can't go any lower.
Right.
Says, my hands are tied, I'm stuck. You think that at least gets you to the third base?
That would get the defendant to the fourth.
But that's
point.
Not enough for plain error. Because can't say, well, yeah, that it'd be nice if he could go lower, but that's not an unreasonably, go through all that stuff. It violates the integrity and justice and all that.
At that point, Your Honor, I mean, we would be looking at the fourth prong, and the United States would take the position that if the defendant was given a full sentencing hearing, full PSR, the court considered his arguments, he had the right to allocute, and he was given the bottom of the guideline. I would direct the court, I filed a 28-J letter. The Sixth Circuit decided the Bruce case where they said the defendant couldn't meet the fourth prong because the evidence was generally uncontroverted and overwhelming, as it was in Mr. Day's case. He couldn't meet the fourth prong then.
That had some sort of innocence or something at hand, maybe.
Perhaps, yes, Your Honor. Let me.
So as long as he's guilty, it doesn't matter that his sentence is illegal. That's your position. That's fine. You have any position you want.
Unless there are further panels with regard to the Booker question, I'll turn to that restitution issue very briefly. Judge Posner, you've raised this morning in a couple of the arguments whether restitution is inside or outside of Booker, and it's the position of the United States, although it wasn't briefed by either party, but it is outside. It's a civil remedy. There's no maximum penalty. Whether the district court abused its discretion by ordering Day to pay restitution in the amount of $39,875 due and payable immediately. First and foremost, Mr. Day's plea agreement calls for him to pay restitution to be determined by the court at sentencing if the parties didn't agree to it ahead of time. We did not reach an agreement, and the court set that amount. By adopting the PSR and the loss, or the PSR and the addenda, it laid out in there the loss each victim, Mr. Day's financial circumstances, and so forth. Therefore, the court satisfied Section 3663 as required. The judge did not order a fine in this case, evidence that he did take into account Mr. Day's financial circumstances when he would be let out of prison. And unless there are further questions with regard to the restitution issue, I would waive the rest of my time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Connell. Ms. Welsh, you have a minute. Do you have anything further?
I don't have anything further, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, and you were appointed, were you not?
I was,
Your Honor. Okay, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.
And the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.